So, good evening, everyone. With two of you, three of you, I was on a retreat last week. In Paris, near Paris, and I was sick for some of it, and I'm still a little bit sick, so I'll do my best to try to be comprehensible, but I'm tired, I have a headache still. And when I decided during the retreat that it was kind of too difficult to stay on my cushion and decided that I would just lie down, there was a koan that came up for me. And then afterwards, I reflected how it's those of you who practice koans, I'm sure it has you bumped into situations where it feels like, oh, this is exactly the koan. It reminds me of the koan. And it's so interesting because for me, it's so telling that. It tells various things that a koan is very specific to a situation, and I'm sure you've all heard Roshi, telling the story of how when she was studying koans, she always felt like giving the same answer. But of course, if you were to give the same answer each time with each different koans, it would be wrong. So, and at the same time, each Cohen talks about the same thing, and at the same time, it is so, oops, sorry. It is so specific to it is so specific to a situation. And it was made in a it actually it's an interaction based on a real life situation. And so I really love it when you arrive in a situation and it feels, oh yeah, it really reminds me of that particular situation, and there is a teaching in there. Yeah, I thought it was a couple of things came up with that. No, I forget. No, I forgot. So anyway, maybe it will come back. Oh yeah. No, what I want to say is, and when we practice the koan, it's just sometimes a koan is given to us, and it is hard to put ourselves in the shoes of the characters in the koan and just like imagine the situation. And I think this is so relevant, the question that I guess she still does that, Roshi still does that, I do that. What does it mean in your life? What is the situation where it actually appears? And trying to find a situation that is very recent, really alive, really real for us. So the koan that is very simple koan, I mean very short koan, the koan that I thought of is the one that appears in the Blue Cleef Record, the third case, where it says, Great Master Ma was unwell. The temple superintendent asked him, "Teacher, has your venerable health been in recent days? And the great master said, Sun-faced Buddha, moon-faced Buddha. So in other words, you know, well, sometimes it's good, sometimes it's not so good. And so, yeah, Lisa came to see me and was like, how do you feel? Like, and yes, and that's also something that I feel so important is that to remember a koan, it really feels like the fact that I remembered that in that particular situation, because this is what I felt, it was also like putting myself again in that situation where, okay, this is what I need to cultivate, that sun-faced Buddha, moon-faced Buddha. Can I just be with what it is? What is right here, right now? So it was a reminder of what I could practice. How could I practice in that particular situation? And it wasn't that easy also because I felt bad about leaving the room. I felt like I was letting down everyone. I felt kind of guilty at times. And then I also had to recognize where I was at. So it was not that easy, not that simple to be moon-faced Buddha, sun-faced Buddha. And just another thing that came up also for me during that retreat, and since then I've been really kind of thinking about that, and it is how there are two things that I'd like to share with you. God, I'm thinking about something and then it's gone. I'm really tired. What is it? What is it? I forgot. Yeah, no, one is, I didn't want to start with this one, but yeah, one is the coherence of everything that we do. It's like, it's so wonderful in retreats that all the small bits and pieces that we are doing during a retreat make sense as a whole in terms of our practice. What I mean by that is we are on a cushion and we're trying to be mindful to the breath. But and at the same time, or at the same time, at some other times, we start to chant together. So there is a whole coordination with all the other participants, with our senses, hearing, listening. And then we eat together. There's this moment of sharing, this moment of serving, of being served. And all that cultivates, all these actions cultivate a series of qualities. And it feels like it's like we are making a necklace with beads. We're putting the beads of mindfulness, we're putting the beads of sharing, we're putting the beads of care, we're putting the bead of love, of appreciation, of dedication, of all these things. And that ends up into that makes a beautiful necklace, beautiful jewelry, a beautiful offering. It makes sense as a whole. When I was a student, I followed the teaching of a Catholic man who lived in Japan, and then came back and taught at university. And he was I was he had a course on Buddhism and Christianity, and I was very much influenced by his teachings. And one of the thing that I kept from that kind of a something that I took away from his teaching was this notion of each tradition makes sense as is coherent in itself. All the rituals, all the things that we do, all the way we practice has a logic, and we are building something, a particular form of jewelry, a particular form of, a particular series of things. And it's very specific, one could say. It might seem a little bit, I don't know, uncomfortable as an idea for us, maybe, if we think that it's just a natural thing that we do, and we just practice openness, and we practice, and that, it just we're not fixed with anything, but that in itself is a coherent path. That is in itself forms a trajectory, forms a path. I always go back to this sutra where, this path that we, it, this image that this path leads somewhere. It's not like it doesn't lead anywhere. And just like the best expression, one of the expression that we have are the vows that we keep chanting. But we find that if we take the time to unfold it, we find that in all the texts that we chant, we find the coherence of that, the meaning, the substance of all that in all the rituals that we do and the forms that we pick. And it feels like to me, that koans are all these stories, and also in its own little world, are points to various beads, various types of various aspects of the practice, various situations that allows us to see a particular field of practice. I guess this is why it's worth unwrapping, making the effort to explain to unwrap and try to speak about what is being practiced to make it clear what we actually practice, what is actually cultivated. All the various pieces and how it transforms our life, you know, and notice in real life situation how it actually transforms, modify, alter the way we respond to life situations, things that we face in our daily life. And when we feel that there's a lack, precisely because we have a certain sense of what the general picture, kind of the general direction is, or the things that we feel is like th that we really want for ourselves, we can really just insist maybe a little bit more on that particular aspect. And I really appreciate retreats also for really giving us the possibility to expose ourselves to others and what it implies in terms of a new kind of realm of practice, you know, interaction, sharing, you know, serving, being served, just all the things that we might find annoying by living with others and being close to others that, I don't know, that snore, that use the sponge differently than we do, and that just like how is it possible that they don't use two different kinds of towels to dry the hands and dry the the glasses and, you know, all these things, all these things. You know, noticing how people wash dishes and the way they do it, which is obviously very different than the way you do it in terms of use of water, use of towels, use of I don't know what. Or you might appreciate even. So learn something from it. I was very touched myself as to just to be taken care of. I didn't ask for it, and it just Claudia and Luisa and Lisa just came and took, brought me stuff, and that was very, very good. I could also kind of relax more because I wasn't in charge of the retreat, so that was also such a relief. And I probably would have pushed myself more if had I been in charge. I'm sure I would have. But again, it's like the questions that I have when I look at myself and the things that, you know, where it really the investigation, also the reflection that comes out, I mean, is conditioned by the kind of the general picture that I have of what is it that I want to cultivate. And there's again, there's a coherence in the vows and There's a coherence in the Four Noble Truths. There's a coherence in the Eightfold Path. You know, all these things that we kind of learn that and are used as signposts, as you know, to give a sense of direction, and more than it meant more than a direction, a sense of, again, a sense of coherence. Of the whole of our practice. Oh yes, now I remember what I wanted to also the last thing I wanted to share is that it last week I had a moment where I thought, oh yes, you know, we sit and we bow and we do all the or the we do the Oreo key and we do all these things, and we try to bring that in our daily life and continue, you know, continue our practice in various ways and takes many forms, and we go back to our cushion and we back to our breath or to our koan, and we really want to cultivate that mindfulness, that awareness, that sense of care, and all these qualities. And so there's this intentionality of cultivating these things. And it really struck me how, at the same time, when we sit, we also, at the same time as we intentionally want to cultivate these qualities, at the same time, we absolutely embody these qualities the moment we start doing it. By really sitting still, we really manifest kindness. We really manifest collected mind. We really just manifest being mindful. The action in itself is at the same time the movement towards and the embodiment of. If that makes sense. And I guess this is also why it totally makes sense to say this is the Buddha seat. When we sit on our cushion and we say this is the Buddha seat, we actually sit there, we cultivate, but at the same time, as soon as we do it, we embody it. We are it at that moment. I don't know if it makes sense for you, your experience, but that really, this is yeah, this is what I felt. Yeah, teacher, how has your venerable health been in recent days? The great master said, sun face Buddha, moon face Buddha. And sometimes it occurs at the same time also. Maybe it's not just on and off. And sometimes I'm Sun Face Buddha, sometimes I'm Moon Face Buddha. Maybe it's, we are that. We're both in, we're the sun and the moon at the same time. Yeah, maybe I'll stop here because that's I think that's was about the kind of the thoughts that came up over the past few days. Yeah, so if you have people are coming and going, it's like if you want to share anything or if you have any questions, I'll be happy to hear also what doesn't make sense also for you with or some if it you can't really relate to these various things that I said about coherence and also this thing about embodiment and how do you feel about that? Yeah.
I just want to share how very moon-faced Buddha and sun-faced Buddha you were. How I was very impressed by just your taking what was happening as just this. You were really didn't look too good, but there you were. This is what it is, and you were the headache. And all that came with it. And so that was that. And regarding the coherence, I'm just what comes up is more like is more is I guess or I guess. When you especially see it in retreats because it's the appropriate setting, let's say, for all that to come into harmony somehow. And yeah, the setting in sort of and allows us to see this oneness, and so it is coherent. Every piece fits into each other, and even the fit there are pieces that stick out, but at the same time they fit in. And yeah, and this is the beauty of yeah the beauty of these re of our retreats is the sort of yeah, dense that happens, and it doesn't mean that you don't get, as you said, like annoyed sometimes and at things, and but it's part of it too, and that's also the coherence of it. So, thank you.
Yeah, and I'd like to add also with that is I've always been puzzled when I look back at the early years of my practice. I'm always puzzled by how much I miss. It seems that's how I kind of relate to my past, but how I seem to have missed certain fundamental elements that was offered, that was on the plate. There were certain aspects that I kind of didn't really see. And especially kind of the relational aspect that this was actually this is what one of the things that was cultivated. And I'm always puzzled looking back at that. I was like, when did it shift? When that is it something that comes gradually? How could I have missed it? Or maybe I didn't miss it, but it wasn't that clear. And so I'm sure that some of the talks were tackling issues that were kind of in the shadow for me, but I wasn't ready, obviously, to grasp them, to tackle them. And I think this is probably why I also appreciate so much going back to all these lists from that we have in the Zen tradition, but also from the Theravada tradition, the early Buddhist tradition, and the Brahma Viharas, and all these lists, because that really points to various aspects. Instead of just saying, with someone reminded me of the koan that I like very much, Gutai, what did your teacher taught? It's like the guy just raises his finger, that's it, or just this, And yeah, that's so true, but it's wonderful also to expand and to realize that you could also say that same thing with 1,000 words. It might look less efficient, and at the same time, I really appreciate it because it allows me to kind of see more clearly. It's less in the dark, all these various aspects, And I guess recently I've also had to push myself to identify these very specific objects as I was writing the website for the mindfulness for mindfulness at work to promote my work as mindfulness teacher in organizations. And I really had to kind of try to pinpoint and really was thinking, so what are the qualities that we are getting that we are trying to kind of steer? That really forced me to do that, and then it really realizes it makes me realize how rich our plate is, really.
Makes me think of the what you were saying, trying to why you didn't see it at first, or makes me think of the text 10 ox pictures that you shared, and how at first you don't see, you see glimpses, and we stumble, and I mean at first and always really, but as you walk along the path, it becomes, you see a little bit more each time, but yeah, it's both immediate and progressive. Because when it's there, it's there. When you know. But then, a lot of the time, you're just walking on the path, looking.
And I remember when we looked at the first session of our study group, when we looked at this 10 ox herding series, the thing that really struck me the most And this is exactly what I felt in my path is that in the 9 first pictures, 9 out of 10, it's really the guy with himself, the guy dealing with no one other than himself, which is symbolizes by the ox, but it's really me with me, me dealing with me. And not realizing that even if you deal with yourself, though you're surrounded by people, but like it seems that certainly this is when I look back, this is often how I feel about what took place. It was really just me struggling with myself during retreats, and it's like all the others are just were like just accessories for that, but just that wasn't the point. Now it's so clear to me that it's so much more the point. It's actually it is the point. And it makes a huge difference. And it's iris all this online, I mean this virtual thing, these apps that help you to meditate that will never It will never be. We'll never be able to fill the gap of what it is to be with one another, and doing that work, doing being together.
Well, I was just thinking the kitchen of your house has been created to see how we can all be in there and not be annoyed by each other. There are enough elements in that kitchen to drive everybody a little bit insane. There's not quite enough room to set things down. Everything is too high for me to put things away, so I'm constantly dependent on other people. There's always a little crunch. Whatever I want to do, I can't quite do it by myself. It's amazing because everything's in there and everybody is cooperating and everything. And people are very attentive about the space and nobody ran into me. I don't know if I ran into other people, but there's just enough of a frustration element to keep you on your toes in there. I don't know if you did it on purpose, but it's very effective.
I certainly didn't do it on purpose, and it's funny. Today, I approved the final sketches for the kitchen in Arles, the kitchen for the center. And it's terrible because there's no space whatsoever to put things away. It just but it's the space we have, and it's really. I was thinking, how are we gonna survive in this kitchen? How are we gonna make food in there? And then I was thinking, is it bigger or smaller than Oisy, even in terms of cabbage and cupboard, how do you say, placard,
Cupboards.
cupboards, and so you'll see if you come. It's going to be a little bit more spacious, but in terms of cupboards and things, it's not going to be super easy. So I wonder, and then I thought, well, we are very good also in doing with what we have, and this is what we learn also. I mean, I remember in Coimbra, Miguel cooking in this non-kitchen because they didn't want us to cook in the kitchen, so he was cooking outside in this almost with this barbecue or something like that. This with that one or two, spot to cook, and so it's certainly not my ideal kitchen, but this is the kitchen we'll have because it's the that's the best I can do with that space. Oh.
I think it was in Ribamar
Yeah,
where
exactly.
Miguel was outside.
Yeah, exactly. Whereas the worst thing is that they had another kitchen, absolutely fantastic, but they didn't want us to use
Yeah.
it. They had this professional equipment and would have made our life so much easier. But no, you did a fantastic job out of that. Yeah, this is these are the things we learn. That is, again, that is very coherent with the rest of, accept, just deal with what is present and do the passing, as Bernie Glassman used to say, make the best possible meal with the ingredients that you have, not the ones you would like to have, but the ones you have. And that's what we're trying to do. That's what we're trying to, that's, yeah, we're training ourselves to do that.
Joa,
Yes.
good evening, everyone.
Christian.
Hi. I've been I'm also really tired. I'm kind of brain dead. I didn't get the coherence or embodiment very well, but I can say that what one thing is strike me about you being healed, just to share how much it's on your mind. The way I look at it is much more, oh, he's healed. Bad luck in a retreat. And you made it to, I don't think you made it. I think you showed us the our big promenade walk in the woods, Fontainebleau, and that was quite fantastic. So, where you really could make the difference, not being possible to go, you were. And you also felt a bit better. So I think in the context, it was quite good. About the retreat, I loved it. I loved it so much. I don't know if you mean coherent, coherent, and
Coherent.
embodied. Obrigada. Coherent and embodiment right now in your day life or during the retreat. Because for me, the retreat is kind of easy. But this was the first retreat in years that I was not ending a marriage, trying to get out of a bad relationship, not in COVID, not with a big financial difficulties. It was really, whew, a retreat, to be there. And the place, it's fantastic. The woods, the big trees, the people that all know each other and feel warm. And your house is fantastic. When you were talking about the little annoyments, I didn't, ha I had this time, but I didn't. I had a lot of the little annoyments. I was laughing inside. Oh, the one that don't uses the sponge like you. Or what I really sometimes getting my nerves is someone who tries to explain you how you should use the sponge. Sometimes gets on my nerves. And I don't react so well, but now in this retreat, the people that showed me stuff because they wanted for me to know how they do, I didn't quite feel like that. Maybe it's an evolution, I don't know, or it's the mood, my mood in the retreat. But I think this is normal also. But what I'm noticing, so today is Thursday. And I'm very meditative, you know. When in the first meditation, usually I do alone. I'm doing almost the 40 minutes with really embodied, like I still was a bit in the retreat. I'm more joyful and glad with my tasks. And I think it's merely because I'm a bit more focused on them, in the sense of fully present. So if you were saying the coherence and the embodiment about taking what we kind of train in the retreats, I am totally experiencing it this week, and it's very good. Thank you.
Yeah, you point to another element that is absolutely essential also, which we should speak more about is right speech, you know. And sometimes in retreats, you know, and I've noticed that during that retreat also, at some point someone said something during the Samu meeting, and I thought, oh God, God, I wish we were in silence because this was inappropriate. And but also when you're on the other side, you know, you don't react. And so if this is, you know, we train in, or when we have counsel circles, you know, being lean, and some people tend to not know when to stop or speak too long or not really from the heart, or it kind of, this is what we, another dimension of our training. You know, another aspect of our training that is super important. And so again, it's another piece that really, in talking about the coherence, really fits really well in this puzzle of things that we're putting together, right? It's like the right speech and the right listening and the right attention and the you know, the benevolence and the joy and all these are small bits and pieces that really creates that wonderful picture that, as Stephen Batchelor would say, this culture of awakening. This is what we share, this culture of awakening, but this really composed, made of various bits and pieces, including right speech, yeah? Or speech, the way we use our, you know, our mouth. Yeah. And it's not just, obviously, it's not just the, I mean, we tr specifically train during that mo during that during a retreat, but it's really, I you know, I really love putting it at test in real life situation. How do I deal with it, with things just outside a pure context retreat or a pure practice, you know, con the context of pure practice or, you know, formal practice. And that I really love, just testing myself, you know, how well did I do? How well do I stand? And yeah, it varies. Sometimes I'm not too bad, and sometimes I'm terrible. Sometimes there are things probably I don't see. Yeah.
Just to add, I love that too. I really love that. When I'm feeling the wisdom spreading or the clearness spreading to my life, to my life as a whole. What you told about the little irritations or whatever, and me remembering the retreats, I just wanted to share this, but I don't know. But I think there's something in here. Like when it's okay for you to get annoyed, but you don't feel personally attacked. And I think that was the difference I noticed. And maybe this week also my tasks are the same, getting annoyed with the children or with the job or someone that, but just getting annoyed and pointing, no, you are doing na-na-na-na-na-na-na, and this makes this. And it ends. It's not personal. No, you don't get, you don't want to prove, you don't want to win. And yeah, I think that also. Not from the ego. A little bit, because I think I still have some attachments.
It is
I feel
possible.
them.
It is
Yeah.
possible. Who knows?
And I feel them also.
Yeah, when you were talking, Joao, about the relational aspect of retreats, it's something that is always really it continues to amaze me how differently I come to feel about people as I deal with as I have all the types of exchange that one can have in during a retreat. I suppose it's one that. The basic fear of another person kind of drops away, and also there's the gentleness of the whole retreat situation. That means that everybody's kinder. There are just so many examples of people. Not that I didn't like, but they're sort of they don't have anything to do with me, or they're not really part of my world, or probably nothing will ever happen. Marjolaine being one, I'm not speaking out of turn because I'm. Pretty much told her this. I didn't dislike her. I just, she was somebody that wasn't in my world. And then spending the 2 or 3 days with her, I'm really hooked up. It always amazes me to go from that initial sort of either kind of blasé indifferent or more than indifferent, I think I'll stay away from this person, to something of really a bond, thanks to practice and thanks to the whole. Everything that happens during a retreat is a wonderful process.
And it's not, again, I insist on that, this is not a on this on a side on the side type of thing, you know. This is not an additional thing. It is part of the whole bundle of qualities that we really just cultivate. And it is it can be rare. I mean, it can be it's not obvious. And
Oh,
I'm
excuse me.
yeah, sorry. You go ahead. Yeah.
It's in a special category of relating. That's not,
Yeah.
I mean, I've loved people that were not in my practice, but it's to me, it's not comparable. It's totally different.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm just thinking, just a situation just came up, a very recent situation came up, and a very good friend of mine that I had dinner with, he's getting separated from his wife and all that, and so they were having that final kind of discussion about it. But as he was telling me the situation, it just I was hearing it very differently from what he heard it. And I, you know, I said, did you manage actually to ask her if there is still love going on? And did you manage to tell her if there is, for you, there is still love? And he kind of looked at me, he's like, no. I mean that, and it, and he said, and then he said, well, you know, I'm not used to talk about, you know, I don't know how to talk about this, these stuff, you know. He was very, if I had to categorize, he was very like a man, you know, unable to just talk about what was that, what is actually going on, and also listening to what the person is actually saying, and not just taking. I really had difficulties to understand if what he was telling me was his interpretation or it was actually what the person actually said and that he was telling me. It was very unclear until I realized all that was 100% interpretation. It had nothing to do with what the person said. So we are learning that, and I probably to some extent take it for granted or take it as a skill that is, you know, that is quite obvious to to deliver, but it's not. It's really not. And it takes a big training. And this is one of the elements of our training. Yeah. Right speech and right listening and talking from the heart. Very difficult. Very difficult. So we should be just really, take note of that, how special that is. And that's one of the elements. Yeah. All right, we're out of time. Well, thank you so much. And